Marianne, the dust is settling now, sort of, on the legislative session that finished up at midnight last night. That last night, things happened really quickly. It's kind of a frantic way to get things accomplished, but I guess it's the nature of the way we do things here. Is that right?
Yeah, we have a hard stop. You know, not all legislatures have a hard stop like we do. Some of them have a somewhat open-ended, or they pass resolutions during their session to end the time. We have a hard stop. Midnight on the 45th day, that clock goes off, and that gavel comes down, and nothing else can pass. So, yeah, the last night, the last couple days, the last week start to get really crazy. That's when everybody's doing their wheeler dealing. It's trying to get their bills out. Things that are stuck way at the bottom of a very long list of bills that they want to have moved up. Everybody prioritizes their bills. It's frantic.
I wonder if it makes things sloppy at all. I mean, if you start seeing, you know, grammatical errors in bills and all sorts of other things pop up.
Well, at this point, most of the bills are written. But what you do see, I mean, I would say that there does tend to be a certain degree of sloppiness because of the time. There's a lot of things that happen. And you know, we've talked about this before. Bills have to pass in their exact same language from both houses. And so if on that last day a bill is sitting in the Senate and it's already passed the House and the Senate says, oh, you know, I want to tweak that one word. Well, that still has to go back to the House, and the House has to do what's called concur,
right,
which means they concur with the change or they agree with the change. You know, that also allows for more substantive changes to be slipped into bills.
Sneakily.
And it comes back, yeah, and they don't have time or they don't take the time because there's also another 75 bills behind it ready to be read. And they just say, you know, motion to concur, and they concur. And then by the time everybody's had a chance to actually read what that amendment did or what that substitute bill or any of those things, you're like, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Mm. That might have not been the wording. And even sometimes the original sponsor of the bill will look at it in hindsight and say, oh, that probably wasn't what I actually intended to do. And so then, you know, the session's over.
It's too late.
It's kind of a redo. Next year, they have to bring it back and they have to refine language. And you see that actually quite often.
Mm, concurrence calendar lawmaking.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
One of the things that happened this year towards the end of the session is that basic per pupil spending in education, this is also known as the WPU or weighted pupil unit, it got a 2.5% bump. What does that mean? Will that have much of an effect?
You know, it won't have a whole lot of effect. As most people, I think, are aware, we're either at the bottom or near the bottom in per pupil funding for our students in public education. The WPU is essentially a factor that's used to determine what is needed to cover incoming students, so an increase. You know, as populations grow every year, basically your public education populace grows. From year to year, as people move in, you have more kids that are going to school every year. So even though the top end, they're leaving, you know, they're graduating, the group that's coming in is a larger group.
That base is expanding.
Yeah, so that has to be increased, and that's typically what that WPU increases. It typically at around 2%, that's covering what the growth is. So 2.5 is a little bit better than covering growth. They had asked, I know public education had asked for about 4, mm-hmm. And that would have brought them closer to the 2007 pre-recession per pupil spending, which showed that we were a little bit higher at that point. During the recession, of course, education budgets, as were all budgets, were cut. There was a lower amount. They didn't increase the WPU for a few of those years because of the recession numbers. You know, taxes decreased during the recession, so you have less money to work with. So they're just still trying to actually get back to pre-recession numbers. So they've still got a little ways to go. It was a decent number. It at least covers the growth for this year, which is really important to keep doing. It's probably not as high as we'd like, and it's not going to move us up that chart in per pupil funding really anything significantly.
I'm sure that fight will continue on. That's something
absolutely
that we'll,
every year.
There's so much more we could talk about here, and you and I will revisit the session for a detailed look at what happened next week. But to finish up today, maybe we could look at what happened with some bills that seem to be competing with each other, and in particular, two similar bills having to do with air pollution standards or air standards.
Yeah, so we had Senator Gene Davis's, which was to allow Utah to exceed EPA standards. That's about all the bill said. It was a very short bill. Then we had Representative Becky Edwards, which was to allow the Department of Air Quality to create rules that were more stringent than federal standards. So it sounds like almost the same bill. It gets into the weeds if you get discussing what those two actually would have done, but very similar bills. Senator Davis's bill failed pretty early in the session. Representative Edwards, it had a broader support, had support from the Department of Air Quality, the Department of Environmental Quality. In the Senate committee last week, it went down to a 3-3 vote. Jim DeBacchus was essentially the breaking vote. They had changed some wording from the word reasonable, which is actually a legally defined term, to evidence-based. And there's discussions back and forth about which one is better, which one actually allows them more leeway in determining what these standards are. But as it turned out, Senator DeBacchus was really frustrated with this last-minute change, and so he voted against the bill. This entire last week, there have been attempts to try to get it up on the Senate floor. So there's a thing called a motion to reconsider. And you can actually ask if they get a two-thirds majority in the Senate to vote on a motion to reconsider, they could have brought that bill back to the floor and voted on it. It had wide support from environmental groups, you know, Moms for Clean Air, Heal Utah, all the ones that were working on it. The Department of Air Quality spoke in favor of it. The governor spoke in favor of it. But clock ticked down. You know, as the clock wound down, that just we ran out of time and it just didn't get the vote to get back on the floor.
Okay, didn't have the support and time ran out. You know, we'll have to talk about all of the air quality legislation that was up for discussion during the legislature when you come back next week.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there were over two dozen bills. So, I mean, there's a lot to talk about how that all shook out at the end.
All right, well, we'll revisit that topic. Marianne, thanks once again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been our Better Utah Legislative Recap on KCPW.